this podcast, I'm going to cover sleep. You'll notice that in sleep labs, they have, or at least in the old sleep labs, they had these chart recorders with four needles on it, and there'd be four little waves going across each page, in fact, 30 seconds to scream through. And these little needles would be waving up and down, and the psychologist in the white coat outside, looking through the silvered mirror, half-silvered mirror, into the lab, would look at these things and look at the waves and declare the subjects asleep. They're in their three or four stages of sleep, and they're in the fabled REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. Now, we're not going to get into that. We're just going to get into what those four lines are and where the electrodes are and what they actually measure. Just these, the hard yards of understanding about sleep. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific and educational stuff. Now, I don't know. Depends how self-obsessed you are. You can think that the performance of your students are all to do with how well you teach and structure things. Then when they don't learn, it's all their fault, you know, their background and stuff and how hard they studied. But really, when you come to think of it, there is, you know, science proves that there are things beyond our control, which we don't have to really do. We as animals have been learning, all life has been learning for a long time, and part of the learning process is the sleep. So you have to really understand that what you are doing is just serving up experiences, and the actual learning process occurs when your student goes off and nods off. Hopefully your students don't fall asleep in front of you. I often joke that I can put students into deep, deep sleep, but that's actually not true. This deep sleep, and so this encounters a whole series of, you know, unfathomable things, unfashionable things that students learn through a good sleep overall environment. In fact, I've forgotten what the book is. A fantastic book about the actual shocking truth of how we learn is a book which says that by not explaining things, by putting things as challenges, which the students have to come back to over a long period of time, leads to greater learning. And there's a whole series of literature which is sort of outside the canon of school education is giving across this by not explaining things, creating challenges and activities and projects to go across. There's this evidence, but there's also the educational theory, activity theory from Vygotsky, which is well researched, that students given challenges or giving experience and social importance to their work, you know, doing it in a social context for social reason, leads to problem-solving activities and endurance on areas of research or investigation, how they live their life in 20 years' time. So the people have done these 20-year studies, but you'll never get to say it. So first off, we've got the idea of sleep. And we may as well give this story. The story that I'm reading, the book I'm reading, is Wallace B. Mendelssohn, The Science of Sleep. And this is it's a popular science book. Everything is written in a nice, clear science, but essentially they move into fairly quickly technical terms. And this is the basic problem of all people trying to impart advanced science, that advanced science has a whole lot of blockages in it, but then it's got a golden thing to, which is really worth understanding. What's really worth understanding is how people learn through sleep, how sleep acts with learning. That's the golden thing. But there's a whole lot of technology, a whole lot of burden, and there's a diplomacy that you don't want to go through the burden. You can continue your life feeling it's great. And I'm not saying there's any magic bullet. This is quite a detailed book using technical terms and neurotransmitter terms and multiple pathways and things like this, which are hard to learn it, and for me to learn it, I've had to actually. I appreciate now me slowly turning on and remembering my knowledge of the chemistry of different neurotransmitters. But we're not going to go down that path. I'm your guide here. I'm going to pick up just a small thread that you can understand by listening and going through. So ECGs. Oh, sorry. There's EEGs, EOGs, and EMGs. So EOME. So the G is for gram, E is for electro, and the middle letter is for encephalo, means brain, oculo means eye, and myo means muscles. There you go. And it's actually very interesting, the Greek, or the Greek and Latin involved in that. But yeah, indeed, there's a combination of these particular waves. I'm just yeah, so this is quite an interesting thing to go. So how did someone say, I want to investigate someone thinking, I know what I'm going to do, I'm going to wire it up. Now, just remember that although we nowadays say we almost expect someone to come along and put wires on something to measure it, that's now in our culture, but previously, we didn't do it, and perhaps this wiring of us is a sort of an induction into our culture, that we ourselves are like cars, we're like machines, we have to put in the electrodes and check out what's going on. It seems natural to us, but it wasn't natural many, many years ago, and I wish I could recall the name of the cavalry officer who kicked it all off. Now, this is true in so many different ways. This is true in, like, I would probably remember it if I had a chance to sleep on it, but I think I've only read it last night. I've had a chance to sleep on it. But there's a cavalry officer. He's riding along on a goat, not a camel, but a horse. Surprisingly, he's a cavalry officer. Having on a horse, and what do cavalry officers do on horses? They charge and stuff, but occasionally they fall off. And why did he fall off? As students would ask. I don't know, but I would make up something that he was absent-minded, something like that. Forgot to. He didn't have enough sleep. He got to. Well, he was feeling groggy and just like driving. If fatigue is the major killer on roads and thousands of places, these major accidents. This suggestion that Chernobyl went up due to sleep was another hidden factor involved it. So he falls off, he falls down, but a artillery piece is rumbling along the thing, and his head is about to be crushed open like walnut by this wheel, but. Someone else. He's not the dopey one. Oh, he's not the. He is the dopey one. The astute cannon driver with his horses stops at the last moment, and to dramatise it, it's within in just so much of his head being crushed, and we all go, oh, ah, and he gets up and says, "Lucky, lucky that." But then his sister says, who is an impossibly distance, a huge distance away. Probably 10 kilometers, if I can remember, a few kilometers away. I don't know where that is. Says, look, at that point in time, I felt this huge pain in my head. Basically, look, I this telekinesis or whatever it is, this is being able to transfer your thoughts across space into other people. Very popular idea back then. Gives you must have happened in the 18 something or others. This great thing, and this officer was just, how did that happen? And so what he did is that he began to connect electrodes up to the head and measure the voltage across your head. And to his surprise, there was waves. And so there's that's evidence that you're producing electrical waves. It must be some sort of antenna. And I'm sure many people believe that. I'm not going to describe too much in the detail of his experiments and where it went and the other people involved who just gradually advanced it. But what happened is that they kept on adding more electrodes to different parts of the head, and to work out what's going on. We're going to discuss that, not before I describe a thing, or you think I poo-pooed it. My brother got run over by a car in an accident. I think so. I was at university, and I suddenly felt this chill. At the same time he got run over, I felt this chill, and then went home and found that he got run over. And how, this is the time before mobile phones and textings and instantaneous, the online stuff. And in sense, this, oh, it's not telekinesis, it's another term, but this being able to challenge your thoughts. We're doing it anyway via mobile phones and Twitter. Twitter's just putting thoughts out there, random thoughts out there. And I have scientifically then said, well, if this is true, I should be able to, by the power of my thoughts, move a single electron, which I can measure with these Keithley electrons. I should be able to try, with the power of thought, to do something. But no, that would ruin all my scientific career. So it's true. But getting back, electrodes. So you put electrodes at the front of the head, that gives you one wave, and you run it up in series, I suppose, at the back of the head, and that's your top trace. That's the EEG. So it's the front of the head and the back of the head. Very crudely, you can get more and more, to add more and more lines to it. But this is combined into a single line, and I forget where you measure your frontal lobe and the back lobe and the general activity. And for that, you can get different alpha waves, beta waves, delta and epsilon waves. There you go. And the slow and high frequency, and then there's brief bursts. I've forgotten what the brief bursts are called, but for just half a second, it really scribbles on it. People are still interpreting what this all means, or not bothering, because we've got some pretty natty ways to actually measure inside the brain itself already. We can actually, who knew that you can actually turn, this is just on, in a powerful magnetic field, your brain does and can be pumped up with radio waves, and then your brain does turn into radio waves, and we can pick up those radio waves and put it in a computer. There you go. That so we're really sort of harking it back on a piece of technology for MRIs, which is turning your brain into a giant radio transmitter and actually reading your thoughts from it. This is actually getting electrodes in the head. So there's electrodes at your forehead and electrodes at the back of your head. I don't know how they do it. It must be pretty icky. And that goes off, probably taped to your back and out, or probably now have a little wireless unit. That's your EEG. And then they put little muscle sensors. So if you measure the voltage across your skin, across a muscle, you can measure muscles. And they put little muscle sensors across your on the left and right side of your eye. And so this is one thing that they've decided that they really want to measure. And this is the electrooculogram. So the first two electrodes get combined into one to give fast and slow wave and rhythmic waves sleep, oh, activity, and then the eye activity. Of course, these are two waves for the left and right wave. It makes me really laugh, because they say, look, the eyes are moving together. And there's no evidence I've ever seen that the eyes never, you don't in the sleep ever have your eyes actually move. One moves inwards and outwards. They don't swing. They're always are trained to operate together. They always do tend to operate together, this electro-octogram. So they have the left and the right eye, and they say, oh, look at them. They're symmetric. But I've never seen a wave trace so far with the left and right eye slightly, they're not the exact opposite. However, there's obviously people who are very well trained can work out, any slight difference between the left and right eye. I'm sure there is some difference, but I would think so. What happens is that the muscle contracts on your left eye and relaxes on your right eye, and they mirror each other. But they're two traces, and traditionally they're superimposed. Oh, they're not superimposed. They're put together. And so when you fall asleep, first fall asleep, you don't get rapid eye movement. You get reduction in eye movement, and that becomes a boring thing. And your EEG becomes which was all furtive, moving up and down fairly quickly, goes into a gentle wave, not before going through a wakeful stage with these things called sleep spindles and K complexes. So sleep spindle, I don't think they really know what they are. Sleep spindle is something where it oscillates at an incredibly high frequency as your consciousness going. It oscillates at very high frequency, and a K complex, who knows what that is? It's the particular shape of beep, which is like a precursor. And then later in deeper sleep, you get the larger waves going, the eyes stop going down. And then, so you've got electrodes in your forehead, your back, either eye, and that gives you three traces. The last trace is an EMG myogram. This is the bottom trace, and that basically stick it on any muscle, and it measures the sort of standby energy of that muscle. So the muscle can move, but when it's ready to move, it's on standby, so it's ticking forward and backwards. And so there's just a general forward ticket backwards, just keep it there on standby. And what happens in the famous REM stuff, the left and right eye start revolving about. You get, well, that's great, you put the measurements there. This is REM sleep. The EEG goes from rather than a long wave processing, this short wave reality sleep, but the EMG muscles suddenly switch off. You go completely, that is, they're in no use stage, and there's various theories what's going on. There's a few other things that happen. You lose in REM sleep, you lose your ability to control your temperature. That just goes out the window. So this is why REM only lasts a short time, and you want to be snug up in bed because you don't want your temperature fluctuating all the time with REM sleep. And you the answer, are we hot-blooded or cold-blooded? The actual answer is both. We are hot-blooded until REM sleep, because at that stage our body control is no longer, the temperature control is no longer on, at least according to this book. And that seems a fairly good, strong book. And of course, there's misconceptions abound about REM. And of course, what's the other type of sleep? The sleep which you have when you're not having REM sleep. It's called NREM sleep, called not REM sleep. That's another curious thing to actually get up. And so it is interesting for me about how different technologies, like the chart recorder and the charts screen, has actually subtly pushed sleep research in a particular, historically, in a particular direction, i.e. that their 30-second snapshots is really determined by the speed of their chart recorder more than and the number of lines is again due to the number of needles that you're going to apply on a chart recorder to get out there. And so that's pushed it. And so there's all these historical things. The big question is, do you need REM sleep to learn? And obviously, people obviously are highly interested in that. And how much sleep do you need? What happens? I think this is a question not considered by maestro teachers who conduct the class. The class has to keep on going, whether they're learning or not, and people don't really research it, but they do research, obviously, soldiers, someone who hand a gun to a rocket launcher to, you expect them to face court-martial if they make the wrong decision, and then if they're sleep-deprived, they actually say, "Oh, I've been sleep-deprived," and it's back in the occupational health and safety issue, not just soldiers, but air traffic controllers or people carrying heavy mining equipment or even truck drivers. There's all this I suppose duty of care as we become components in a much bigger, more complex system. Also, hospital registrars, surgery teams. You know, what time is the best time to do surgery? Obviously, not late at night. Or what's the best colouring of surgery? Is it best to do surgery with a red light, which helps you go to sleep? There's all these aspects. But going across, one of the basic things you need to know is an EEG, the electroencephalogram, the EOG, the electroocularogram, and the EMG, the electromyogram. And those three, the electroocularogram gets left and right, gives you four classic traces. And the wakeful's one thing, but the REM sleep is great on eyes, wakeful EEG, and the EMG is your slipped off. Look, there's more than an amazing number of things to do with sleep, having read through this book, nearly two-thirds of the way through it. Thanks for listening, and I hope this is helpful. In the meantime, keep on thinking science, doing science, and teaching science. Bye for now.